From WVUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hawaii seems like paradise. Sunsets, beautiful beaches, and palm trees. And that weather. But for some Hawaiians, living in paradise means living without a home. Hawaii tops the nation when it comes to homelessness. The legislature there is now considering a bill that would classify homelessness as a medical condition. Doctors could write a prescription for housing. Could it work? What about for the rest of the country? This hour on Point, big ideas for tackling homelessness in America. You can join us on air or online. Do you see more homeless people where you live? Are the faces different? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from Honolulu, Hawaii, is Liz Barney, a journalist who wrote a feature for the Guardian newspaper's series Outdoors in America about homelessness. Her article is headlined, Doctors Could Prescribe Houses to the Homeless Under Radical Hawaii Bill. You can link to it and the larger series at our website, onpointradio.org. Liz, thanks for being here. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about this bill that classifies homelessness as a medical condition.
Yeah, so the bill was introduced earlier this year, and it definitely caused quite a stir. So basically, the bill proposes classifying homelessness as a medical condition with the intention of being able to use Medicaid funds then to pay for houses for individuals who are suffering from chronic homelessness and also have mental health struggles or substance abuse issues.
So it uses Medicaid funding for housing. How so? How does that happen?
So according to Senator Green, the plan would be to have doctors work with social workers to identify and assess individuals who are some of these more severe chronic cases and then prescribe housing, basically, and the tap into Medicaid funds to pay for that housing.
Who exactly qualifies?
So the population that they're really looking at with this bill are the chronically homeless people who have been homeless for more than 6 months, and they also suffer from severe medical conditions, so either mental health or substance drug or alcohol addictions.
Step back a minute for us here and describe the problem of homelessness in Hawaii, the seriousness of it as you see it.
Sure. So Hawaii actually has the highest per capita rate of homelessness in the nation, and it's become an increasingly visible problem here in Hawaii because obviously tourism is a huge industry here, and so there's been a lot of debate about, you know, why there's so many people in the street and is this going to affect our economy, and so it's definitely a cause of concern in Hawaii.
Here's a Hawaii News Now reporter named Daryl Huff moderating a roundtable discussion about homelessness in Hawaii. This is for PBS.
Homelessness is a growing problem in Hawaii, where more than 6,900 men, women, and children have no permanent shelter. That's more per capita than any other state. On Oahu, it seems like an endless shell game, with homeless swept away from one area, simply reappearing somewhere else.
And so, Liz Barney, the homeless population in Hawaii already uses a large portion of Medicaid funds, right? Help us understand that.
Right. So, you know, there's a lot of individuals here, or, you know, there's a certain population of individuals here that will visit the hospital multiple times. Sometimes even, you know, the emergency medical services told me they had an individual last month that was taken to the hospital via ambulance 21 times over the course of 31 days. And so a lot of these people are being seen for the same problems again and again. And then these are racking up really high bills in the medical system.
So the idea is it cuts costs long term, right, while providing physical housing, physical shelter with these Medicare funds in the short term.
Right, right. So the idea is that if these people are placed in houses, according to various studies, it's shown that the actual medical cost of these people decrease over time. And so the theory is that hypothetically, if you give them a house, it would reduce their cost. And overall save the state money.
Let's stand by for a moment. Joining me now from Skype from Honolulu, Hawaii, is Democratic State Senator Josh Green, the Hawaii legislator who proposed SB 7. He's also an emergency room physician. Senator Green, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
So what prompted you to introduce this bill?
Well, it was kind of a combination of things. Over many years, I've been an ER doctor on the Big Island and in Hawaii, and then I've been a senator as well. So the two issues converged. I take care of a lot of people who are homeless and who are really suffering and struggling, as it was described earlier, with they've been on the street for a long time, over 6 months or many years. They have mental illness or drug addiction. They keep coming back to the ER, and I just keep seeing them to only put a Band-Aid on or help with a shower or a meal. But they use the medics. It costs many, many thousands of dollars. And to be quite honest, I don't really do them much good. I don't help that much except for just a few hours at extreme cost. And then I'm also the chairman of the Human Services Committee, which is responsible for our state's budget for Medicaid. And over the years, I've seen an incredible surge in our spending for these very same individuals who are suffering, not getting help, and our budget's going through the roof. So I just decided we could do better. One night on call, in my little call room at the hospital, I started putting pen to paper for this bill, and I do believe it's going to meet with some optimistic support because it both saves the state a lot of money and actually gets people into houses.
And you're using Medicaid money to do that. Are there any restrictions on that?
Well, we're just in like kind of the second inning of the baseball game here. So let me describe a few things, give you some additional facts. It was very well laid out earlier. The details are 3.61% of our Medicaid patients in the state of Hawaii, and we're a Medicaid expansion state, about one in four of our people are Medicaid. Mm-hmm. 3.61% of our people are consuming 61% of our Medicaid dollars. So to give you the real number, that means 13,000 of Hawaii's citizens, we have about 1.4 million people, are consuming $1.2 billion. And I'm saying this as an ER doc. When I deliver those services, they're just not very effective. So the beauty of this plan is we did the study here. Helping Hands Hawaii did a study in Hawaii, and they showed that the moment we get a roof over someone's head, which from my perspective is kind of the compassionate thing to do, but the moment we put a roof over someone's head, their healthcare spend, their Medicaid spend dropped 43%. So we can save hundreds of millions of dollars and get that roof over the person's head. And just before I finish this point, that decrease in health spend includes the cost of giving them housing first level services.
Mm. So the numbers really speak for themselves, Senator, Dr. Green. Are there any concerns about this bill?
Well, first call me Josh, okay, just for simplicity. Okay. I appreciate that. And then, of course, there's always concerns when you do a major paradigm shift. The irony of this bill, and I've been in many legislative rodeos before, is that I'm getting unique support from fiscal conservatives, who I count as friends some days of the week, because they see this as a much better way to spend government money to get results. And then I'm getting a lot of support from my left-winger friends, like my mom and my Uncle Rick and Carmen, who live there in Boston with you, because it's a social justice question. So tons of support. But the resistance is to change. A lot of people are very accustomed to doing things the way we have been doing, which is heartfelt and compassionate. But as you can tell, it's not really working in a lot of places. The homeless population is surging. You heard that report from Daryl Huff where he said we had 6,800 people homeless just like a year or two ago. Now we're over 9,000. Mm-hmm. People are coming to Hawaii from the mainland. And our Medicaid spending has doubled in the last 6 years on the homeless individuals that are utilizing services.
So you're basically saying that homelessness is a medical condition. That's what you're terming it in this bill.
It is a medical condition. And let me answer any critics out there that might think it's not. One simple fact. If you're homeless in America, your lifespan is 50. You are likely only to live to age 50. If you're living in housing, if you have a home and your life is somewhat stable, your average lifespan is 78.1 years in America, 81 years in Hawaii, because we have it good out here. So you get the idea. Number one, you're in a crisis and you're going to die as much as three decades earlier. Plus, when you look at homelessness, some people say, oh, that's a social determinant of health. The reason this idea, I think, has caught fire is I'm being more direct. I'm saying homelessness is actually a medical condition. The treatment is housing. We would vet it very, very carefully. I'm sure we'll get into this during the interview. Insurers would have to approve the right people. The Department of Human Services would have to help find the housing.
Mm-hmm.
But to call it just a social determinant of health means that you're going to continue to have to use all the other mechanisms that have very minimal funding. Housing first budgets are never very robust in any state. The moment you tap into Medicaid dollars, where there's a lot more money, you get all the resources you need, in this case, to write a prescription for housing, and also you get the savings. If there weren't savings, there's no way I could get this approved by any of my colleagues. That's why I think they're starting to come around.
Well, savings and, I mean, it's stability, right? I mean, you think about the human face of the homeless population. I mean, explain the stability that comes when somebody has a home, and many other things kind of take care of themselves.
That's right. One very important point about this healthcare cost thing, and I talk about cost a lot so that Rush Limbaugh doesn't go crazy on the news after me and other people don't get all up in arms. But from a civilized standpoint, to be compassionate to people, if you don't have a person in a home and they're on the road, if on the street, if they're a woman, they're going to be sexually assaulted. If they're a teenager, they're going to get on drugs so much easier. People are going to be put into, they're going to be, I hate to use this word, but pimped out. You know, teenagers end up in the sex trade industry.
Yep.
And then children don't get an education. So all of these problems become massive when the family falls into chronic homelessness. So I say, solve the problem, get people and families into houses, and you not only see these savings, but you also see all the other savings downstream, and you actually take care of people and prevent those catastrophic consequences. Mm.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking about homelessness in America this hour and some big ideas to solve the problem. You can join the conversation. Have you ever been homeless? What helped you get back on your feet? Here is Dr. Daniel Cheng speaking about this issue with Hawaii News Now back in February about how emergency room visits by the homeless, over 11,000 in 2016, are impacting that community.
The cost is so great right now. What is a community paying in terms of not being able to access 911, paying in terms of actual cost, paying in terms of not being able to be seen timely when we do have life-threatening emergencies?
And here is some sound. It's a sprawling homeless community. It's taken root near H1, near the H1 freeway in downtown Honolulu. Corinne Ipia told Hawaii News that she's lived there for 7 months because she cannot afford to pay rent.
Figured the more clean we keep the area, the longer we get to stay, you know, until everything falls in place with the housing and, you know, whatever I need, I signed up for to help myself.
We're speaking this hour with Liz Barney, who wrote about Hawaii's homelessness problem, and with Hawaii Democratic State Senator and emergency room physician Josh Green. He has proposed a bill that would treat homelessness as a medical condition. And it authorizes doctors to prescribe housing as a treatment. So, Dr. Green, Josh, practically speaking, what does that mean? What exactly do you do?
Well, in this case, I would write a prescription for a patient if I had seen them and know them very well. Someone asked a couple times, how do we know who is the chronic homeless individual that would need this service? Well, I can tell you that Daniel or I, he's a great guy, and the ER doc that you just had on the recording, we know by name, by first name, by middle name, by birth date, intimately these individuals who are suffering and see us over and over again. So I'd write the prescription. I would say Jack Smith, or probably a Hawaii name or a Filipino name or a Japanese name in Hawaii, give that name, their birth date, housing 6 months to be approved with social work and Department of Human Services. We would give the diagnoses to the insurer, and they would then do their due diligence, just like when we write a prescription for someone who needs treatment for hepatitis C or a severe infection or for their diabetes. It would have to be, of course, authorized, because it's not an inexpensive treatment. It would be about $1,800 a month or so. But to tell you the truth, that's a heck of a lot less expensive than one day in the hospital. It's less expensive than most antibiotics I give for a severe infection. And sometimes treatments for certain serious illnesses, as you've reported very eloquently on your program, exceed $100,000 a year. So I'd write the prescription. the insurers who are already managing the care would work with a social worker, and we'd move forward. Some people would qualify, and if we got it wrong, a doctor like Daniel Chang or myself, then they wouldn't receive the treatment. But to tell you the truth, I already met with the CEOs of some of the insurance companies here in Hawaii, and they see the value and need to do this as well, because they are the very ones that process the claims where it's $100,000, $200,000 for the same individual, and they themselves don't see that person getting better.
Liz Barney, how long are these homes offered to these homeless citizens?
Through the program? No, that really isn't something that's been defined necessarily yet. And so it's kind of in its first steps in this bill, and there hasn't been a whole lot of, you know, discussion about how long that would last.
Mm-hmm. So, Dr. Green, then, are there loopholes in this legislation? I mean, if the parameters are too broad, I would suspect that that opens the possibility that, you know, some, not all, but some could stay on the street for a period of time and then qualify for free housing. I mean, how do you close the gaps here?
Well, there are loopholes for every part of America and American society, of course. So the loopholes are pretty strict. As I envision it, first of all, you have to be a citizen of our state. People have come from the mainland and are homeless in Hawaii, without a doubt. But we would have to see that they've had these diagnoses for real diagnoses. It wouldn't just be someone showing up and have been trying to gain the system so they started to get free rent, because if they didn't carry a diagnosis of a severe illness, mental illness, which nobody wants, you know, God bless people, they don't want a diagnosis of severe mental illness or drug addiction on their, you know, in their profile, that would be verified also. So if I hadn't seen them in the ER and written down they were suffering from schizophrenia or major depression syndrome, they would be a homeless individual perhaps, but they didn't have those diagnoses, so they wouldn't qualify. And we're just starting. I also should point out that one of the very important reasons to do something like this, having a game changer and decreasing cost, is so that we can afford all the other programs in our state for people who may be homeless, but suffering a little bit less, might not have as great a difficulty getting into housing because they've just fallen into poverty. They've missed paychecks and then been kicked out of their house. We don't have the capacity in our budget to take care of them because, like I said earlier in the program, we're spending such a giant disproportionate amount of our state resource on a very small part of our population.
Right. You said 3.61% of Medicaid recipients take up 61% of your Medicaid dollars.
Right. And so, you know, I'm no fool. I know that if you're going to propose game-changing or paradigm-shifting legislation, you better have your numbers straight. And so I'm also a medical director of a really large group, about 800 physicians, about a quarter of the physicians in Hawaii. I actually got the insurance companies that manage Medicaid in our state to break down the actual exact numbers from my docs, which are a quarter of the state, on our patients and what their consumption of service was. So those numbers are real numbers. Those are the actual spend.
Yep.
So when I look at those numbers, and as it was pointed out by Liz, we're going to have to get this vetted very carefully. The bill will have the auditor, our state auditor, go through the program, find out what it would look like, because whenever you stand up a new insurance coverage, anything in our state and probably most states, you have to get approval and you do a sunrise study. That's what the bill does. You get it going that way, and the next thing you know, we will be able to prove very, very clearly that our people need this, that it saves our state money, and also they'll be able to fine-tune what the threshold is on how many people we can cover and afford. To tell you the truth, I think we can't afford not to cover as many people as qualify, because we will be saving more than 40% for each person.
Let me get some calls in here. A lot of listeners are on the line. James first in Miami Beach. Hi, James. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
First, I'd like to start by making a statement that homeless people do not want to be on the street, number one.
Right.
I think a lot of people say that to themselves because they're so busy themselves trying to keep off the street. They don't want to have to feel like they need to help. But the other thing is that I travel a lot, and all around the U.S. and the world, really. And I've seen a huge uptick in homelessness all throughout our country in the major cities, and now even in Western Europe in places like Germany and France. As far as I'm concerned, and from my own personal experience as well, I've looked at the homelessness because And there's lack of affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really appreciative of people like Dr. Green coming up with creative solutions.
It certainly is. It's creative and it's innovative. James, I thank you for your perspective. On that note, let me bring in from Washington Steve Berg, Vice President of Policy and Programs at the National Alliance to End Homelessness. He's got the national picture of what's working, what's not when it comes to ending homelessness. Welcome to the program, Steve. Great to have you.
Thanks, Jane. It's great to be here.
You just heard this caller say, I see more and more homelessness around where I go, around this country, even around the world. What do you say? What are the numbers?
Well, I think the numbers vary by community, but in places like Hawaii, in places like California, where housing costs are high, we're definitely seeing more people on the streets, more very severely disabled people with life-threatening health conditions living on the streets.
What's your read on the Hawaii bill? What do you think about it?
You know, I hear this, and my main response is finally, finally. We've known, people working in the homeless field have known for 20 years that housing for people with these severe disabilities, mental health problems, housing people like that saves taxpayers money. But I think it's within the last few years that people in the medical care system have seen in a much more thorough way, have understood who their high-cost patients are and what's causing them to cost the medical system so much money. And one of the big cost drivers is homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing a lot more interest from medical care providers all over the country in just exactly the question, why can't we just pay for their housing?
Mm.
And so it's great to see Hawaii standing that up.
So how does the Hawaii proposal compare with other state initiatives in using these Medicaid funds to address homelessness? I mean, I know California and Washington have tried similar programs. Tell us about what others are doing specific to this Medicaid issue.
Well, I think there's a lot of places, as you mentioned, California and Washington are using Medicaid to pay for a lot of housing-related services, social work kinds of things. California has a system where you can, if you have homeless people in housing and you save money, then you can put the money, the savings in Medicaid money, into a fund and then use that fund to pay people's rent. This Hawaii bill, if I understand it correctly, is the first one that would just sort of set aside all that complicated stuff and just say, we're going to pay this person's rent and we're going to use Medicaid for it, and that's going to save Medicaid a lot of money. So that's the justification.
Here's a question from Morgan in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Morgan. You're on the air. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. I just had a quick question regarding this. I live in Ann Arbor, so, you know, nearby Detroit, I see the abandoned houses.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of homeless people a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just concerned. It's like nobody misunderstands that homelessness is detrimental to everybody's well-being. You know, it's bad for your health. Who knew? But isn't this some sort of, in a way, some sort of like political buck passing? You know, there's not enough.
What do you mean, passing the buck? What does that mean, Morgan?
Just in terms of there's not the political will to say, okay, these people are suffering, they need to get housing. You have to put it to a doctor to actually go through the process and prescribe them them housing, because apparently they don't understand that housing is the problem.
Sounds like nothing else has worked, and this is maybe something that's being tried. Dr. Green, how do you respond?
Well, I thank Morgan for his call, and James, too. This is a slightly weird circumstance because I'm representing both the government and a doc, right?
Right.
I see the problem from those perspectives.
Yep.
But I hear you. It would be easier, and the answer would be very simple, if simply everybody or every state appropriated enough money for housing first. If we did that, we would again see all of the benefits that I described earlier as far as decreasing costs to society, getting more services to people who are really having a hard time. We could be more elegant about it. But in most states, and I would defer to Mr. Berg, who knows this issue much better than I do, we just don't ever have the funding adequate to house the people that we need to in Housing First. There are other solutions, of course. I mean, we could go more to the root cause and talk, and we won't talk about it today probably, but about living wage. We could talk about doing drug treatment for free for everybody in the country, and that would mean there'd be far fewer people that got into the circumstance of chronic homelessness. But in this particular case, doctors are just very close to the population. We know our patients well. We spend a lot of time with people in their most intimate and emergent times of need. So it's at least a good place to have an entry point, from my perspective, to speak to that social worker and to speak to whether or not a person needs this help.
Laura Massey has a question from our Facebook page. She says, I hope your guests will address issues of homeless families and children who are often left out of Housing First policy discussions. Steve Berg, speak to that. Children, families, how do they play into this conversation?
Well, I think this is a big part of the homelessness problem is children with families. In most places, they make a pretty thorough effort to make sure there's at least some sort of shelter indoors for families with children who are homeless. So the impact of that is that nobody sees homeless families unless they volunteer in local shelters or something like that. But this is a big part of the problem. The medical care issue is part of that problem. But I think the issue gets back, as several people have said, the issue gets back to housing. I mean, the federal programs that provide housing subsidies for people are just never funded anywhere near enough to house everybody. About a quarter of the people who are eligible for housing assistance from the federal government actually get it, just because the U.S. Congress decides to spend the money on something else. So it's really the reason this hasn't been addressed as a housing issue is just a question of priorities. And that is a particularly crucial issue right now, as the new administration is in place and they're having new policy priorities. How this is going to come out there, I think, is keeping me up at night. I know that.
Let's get Diane in here from Hinesburg, Vermont. Hi, Diane. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I wanted to make a comment about been a social worker for 30 years and retired. I've seen a lot of homelessness in my work experience. And as quickly as we find places for people to live and we get them installed in those apartments, the rents go up and they're homeless again. So from my perspective, there are two factors that feed into homelessness besides mental illness and substance abuse. And those two factors are that families can't make a living wage, and that rents are just astronomical. Mm-hmm. If you look in the Burlington area for a really rather not upscale apartment.
Up in Vermont, yeah.
Bedroom in Vermont, in the Burlington, Vermont area, you know, they're asking $1,400 a month rent. Mm-hmm. And even if you have two parents working, $22 an hour, you know, $11 each parent, you cannot afford to pay that rent and the heat and the electric and buy groceries.
And put food on the table, right. Right. I hear it, Diane. Thank you. Steve Berg, you know, these are two problems that exist in many large cities across this country and, frankly, smaller cities increasingly.
Yeah, and the problem of housing affordability, as a number of people have said, is really at the base of all of this. That being said, there are places in the world where housing is very, very expensive, where people are not living on the street. So there's two basic approaches. One is this sort of emergency response approach. If somebody's living on the street, that's just got to be treated as an emergency and the person got into housing. But then there's a whole range of things that the communities, that the national governments can do to make housing less expensive.
We'll talk more about that after the break. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron, knowing that incredible ingredients make incredible meals. They follow the highest quality standards and deliver recipes along with just the right amount of ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. New recipes are created each week, so you can customize your recipes each week. Check out this week's menu and get three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/onpoint. You don't have to spend time at the grocery store. Make great meals in under 40 minutes. There's no commitment, so pick what you want at blueapron.com/OP.
Hi, it's Tom. Thanks for listening to this On Point podcast. I want you to take a moment to think about the people you care about. Have they ever listened to a podcast? All this month, we're asking our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. This one? Another one? Do it in real life or on social media, and if they don't know how to download them, give them a quick lesson. You'll be opening up a new world for them. Tell us what you're recommending with the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod, and thanks.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're looking at bold ways to combat homelessness in America this hour, and you can join the conversation. Do we all have to do our part to help the homeless? In the trailer for Rex Moribe's 2015 documentary titled Dear Thalia, about a homeless family in Honolulu, Thalia's mother, Tabitha, describes the pain of seeing her daughter prepare for routine sweeps of sidewalks by city officials. These sweeps force homeless people to relocate from parks and sidewalks, especially in areas that are popular with tourists. City officials discard any unattended belongings, such as tents and sleeping bags.
She gets all her stuff ready and packed, and she has it on her back by the time we're done, ready to go. Telling her, Mommy, Daddy, I'm ready. You would say, oh, how cute, you know, but it's so heartbreaking. Because every day that goes by, we need to worry about who might take her stuff, who might take her childhood this time.
We've been talking about Hawaii's homelessness problem with journalist Liz Barney and Democratic State Senator and Dr. Josh Green, and looking at the national problem with Steve Berg from the National Alliance to End Homelessness. Joining me now from Honolulu is Shiwani Johnson. She is a legal assistant at a law firm in downtown Honolulu. She's also an On Point listener. She proposed today's program through the Hearken module on our On Point Listens page. It's part of our National Listening Tour, and we wanted to bring Shiwani on to say thank you. Thanks for the idea, Shiwani. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. Great to be here.
So we're glad you reached out to us with this. It's such an important issue. What made you want to pitch us?
Well, a couple of things. Well, a lot of things, actually. I have so much to say about this. Mostly, it's how much I see it. Mm-hmm. I've been in contact with homelessness my whole life. I was born and raised here, and I've only left twice. And I went to school with kids who were homeless. I walk past a park on my way to work, which is full of homeless people. The library right next to that park is the street in front of it is lined with homeless people. Downtown Honolulu. Line with homeless people. If you go to Waikiki and you want to go to the beach, homeless people. If you go to Hawaii Kai, like it's pretty much everywhere here. Mm-hmm. And
how do people generally react to the homeless population where you are? We just heard this clip from this documentary about, you know, the city sweeps and mm-hmm. unattended belongings and children, and you know, it's hard. How do people generally react?
Well, People from here, it's kind of the day to day. But I've worked in Waikiki, and tourists react very differently. They're very surprised. They expect this to be paradise. They expect, you know, us all to be going to the beach and surfing, mm-hmm. and life is great. But and then they come here and they're like, why isn't everything like this?
Mm-hmm. So what do you think of this bill, Shiwani? What do you think of it?
I have mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I can see what Mr. Green where Mr. Green is coming from as far as people who have mental illness or suffer from some type of addiction. But I think that's only part of the issue. Like I said, I see it every day, and it's more than you had a clip earlier in the hour from someone who was talking about not being able to afford rent. And rent in Hawaii is absolutely ridiculous. There's somebody from, I think, Vermont calling and talking about a two-bedroom apartment for $1,400. Good luck finding a one-bedroom apartment for $1,400 here. So, and that's, like, utilities not included, in a not-so-great part of town.
So there needs to be a multi-pronged approach, obviously, to solve this problem. But yes. Is it a good start? Is what Senator Green proposing, it is a good way to sort of get in the door of this very complex problem?
I mean, I could see how it would be. But again, like you said, it's a multi-pronged approach. And if you're just focusing on the people who are sick versus like, because there are people who are homeless who work one or two jobs and still can't afford to live here. So, I mean, I really think that it's only dealing with this part of the problem. And I mean, to start with, yes, but there needs to be other steps taken.
We are so grateful to you, Shawani Johnson, for suggesting this topic and really appreciate you as a listener. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You can propose a show idea, listeners, as well at onpointradio.org. Shawani, thanks again. Let's see, was that Senator Green who wanted to jump in?
Yes, Jane. First, let me just say thank you, Shawani, for calling. She's absolutely right. This is just one piece of it. You know, we submitted dozens of bills to make sure that we can start working on finding the way to make and build more housing, to just have more resources for rent subsidies. All of the issues have to be taken up. The reason that this has become kind of my focus this session is because of the health economics and the homelessness economics of it. Mm-hmm. I'll reiterate that Shawani points out the right message. We never get enough resource to take care of all of the people. This population, this is about 20% of our homeless population, the chronically homeless, or I refer to it as ground zero, where people are suffering so greatly.
Right.
But because of the economics of the problem, when we see the many, many millions of dollars get consumed for just a few people, as it was pointed out by Mr. Berg, we don't have either the budget or the political will to make taking care of all of the people. The other, in this case, the other 8,000 to 10,000 people in Hawaii who are homeless, we just don't have the resources from our other committees to get the money there. That's why
I hear you.
By starting and focusing here, it makes all the other solutions possible.
Let's get Jeffrey in here from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Hi, Jeffrey. I'm glad you waited. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane. Well, my short story, or long story short, is, I'm currently homeless. And I've been that way for about 5 years now, but for a couple of years I've been just drifting. I'm from California, and I was evicted from my apartment with my family and my mom and dad, and we couldn't afford the rent at the time, and so we got evicted. And my dad was 88 at the time, and he was a stroke victim, and he passed in 2010, and my mom passed in 2011. But with the whole prescribing, you know, homeless care, I believe there should be a good screening process for everybody. You know, if there's somebody addicted to drugs, and I believe there should be good treatment options for them, and also that they shouldn't be, you know, housed up and still be doing drugs. So
if there was a good screening process, this sounds like a program that would work, right? I mean, you've been in this situation. Yeah. This sounds good to you.
Right. Medical treatment for people who are severely addicted to something is very important because, I've known people that go through severe sickness if they don't get treatment. Yeah. And, that's
Jeffrey.
Basically to adjust to things, but I mean, I've been drifting now for 5 years, and I have no ID, and it's hard to get my birth certificate shipped in, hard to find people to help out doing that, And so I can't even get a job right now. And that's
I wish you the best. And I so appreciate you calling today and giving us your perspective. You take care and good luck. Liz Barney, I want to bring you back in here because I hear Jeffrey, and I know that there's some opposition to the implementation of this idea. Jeffrey talks about good screening and some of the things that need to happen. Talk about that a little bit briefly, if you would.
Sure. So there's really three main oppositions that I've heard. And the first is, you know, from a social perspective, the stigmatization of homelessness and, you know, just classifying homelessness as a medical condition, you know, for people who might, you know, be working and not necessarily, you know, it might just further perpetuate that stigmatization of homelessness in an already derogatory sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second one is the people who would take advantage of the system. That kind of speaks to, you know, the concerns for a really strict screening process because, you know, there's a lot of people who say, you know, oh, sure, who wouldn't want to live in Hawaii and have a free home? And so, you know, there's a lot of concern for how are we going to set these parameters and really make sure that we're only helping the people who are meant to be helped by this program and not draining the system and, you know, just giving all the Medicaid funds away to anyone who wants to have a house. And then the third concern that I really hear is, you know, I spoke to the Institute for Human Services, and they strongly support this bill. They, you know, they said there's absolutely a need for funding for the housing for these individuals who are seriously really suffering. But the struggle is going to be to figure out how are we going to implement this program and how are we going to make sure that the housing is tailored to meet the really specialized needs of this population with serious issues.
Good points, and I appreciate you bringing them up, Liz. Let me get another call in here. Jim in Omaha, Nebraska. Hi, Jim. You're on the air. Welcome to you.
Hi, Jane. Dr. Green, would you consider requiring healthcare services as part of your prescription, or would that just be too expensive, especially with Medicaid reimbursement probably going to be decreasing with the American Healthcare Act?
Mm-hmm. Good question, Jim. Thank you.
Brilliant, brilliant question, Jim. So let me just say, let me speak to several of these points, especially that last one. Yes, Jim, in fact, implicit in the bill is the service that we would give people if they qualified for their chronic homelessness. And that is that chronic homelessness appropriation or the prescription that got filled would include 100% the full wraparound services that people get in Housing First. So that's already built into the cost in Hawaii, period. So if you don't do the services and give people access, say, to a community health center, I was a community health center doc with the National Health Corps in my first kind of part of my professional career, so I know the value of that.
Mm-hmm.
It won't work. So absolutely 1,000%. And let me say a few other things. This is not going to be a perfect solution for every chronically homeless individual. Some people will obviously not avail themselves of these services. Some people will for 3 or 4 months, and they make it a lot better and do better, and that just is a small victory, but a victory for everyone. Others, hopefully the ones with the individuals with families, will be able to be much more stable because they've got a loved one that's maybe got schizophrenia, they were all homeless, and now when he or she gets treatment, everything stabilizes. But the treatment is so essential, and it goes hand in glove with the issue. I'd like to comment on the stigma question, which was mentioned earlier. We've been through this a lot with all sorts of issues, with drug addiction, with HIV/AIDS over the years that we've all seen as healthcare providers. Yes, the stigmata occur. They're there. But there's no greater stigma than actually being on the street and being victimized. So I'm speaking specifically to chronic homelessness, not just homelessness, and I think that we actually have a cure, amazingly. So we can remove the stigma by removing the, in this case, quote-unquote disease, which is that people are just suffering as chronically homeless people. So the callers, the people that are taking the time, it's so wonderful that Jeffrey called because it's a real thing for him. People realize very quickly that as a society, if we don't get a hold of this problem, it's all of our neighbors. Everyone has somebody in their family that is either suffering this way or close to becoming homelessness because they just can't afford to live in America. So it's relevant.
Dr. Green, you mentioned this briefly. We don't have much time left, but I do want to get Janet Hayes' question here from Twitter. She says, please ask Senator Green what Hawaii does to house people who will not voluntarily seek care.
who will not voluntarily seek care. Okay, we do have legislation to get people mental health care support, but we don't, if they're not, you know, of course, if they're not a danger to themselves or others, we don't institutionalize them, but we do now have legislation to get people into treatment, outpatient treatment, so it's a part of the process.
Let's get James in here from Portland, Maine. Hi, James. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes. Hi, Jane.
Hi.
This is directed to Dr. Green. I applaud him for all the hats he wears and the care and work he does. I'm a veteran. I was stationed in Hawaii, and I'm sort of familiar with the environment there. I'm also a physician assistant who works with the mentally ill and homeless here in Portland, Maine.
Mm-hmm.
Two major points that I'd like to make.
Okay.
Directed towards Dr. Green's work in cost savings. That hasn't been mentioned is, one, the cost savings that putting, homeless in homes would be also considered would be the law enforcement costs of policing the homeless, the incarceration of the mentally ill or the homeless that get caught up in the systems, you know, via drugs, and also the court costs. And then just, you know, the time and resources that this homeless vicious cycle takes away from other citizens who aren't homeless, in the ER, the waiting time.
Yes,
hospital bed.
I got it. I so appreciate your calling, James. Those are important points. Law enforcement, court costs, time and costs from other issues. Our time is short. Steve Berg, I want you to jump back in here because I just am curious. Is Hawaii's program applicable to other states, or are different innovations needed in different places? What do you say?
Well, I think the basic idea that the medical system can use housing as a tool in dealing with patients like this is, I think, applicable everywhere. Exactly how it's going to work out is going to be different in different places. Hawaii has sort of a unique housing market, very, very tight and very expensive and growing all the time. But I think the basic idea is a strong one that we are moving forward on, I think.
What's your hope, Dr. Green? 20 seconds here. What's your hope for this bill as you look ahead out on the horizon? What do you hope to see?
My hope is it lights a fire across America. I was contacted by Senator Miller in Rhode Island, Josh Miller, yesterday. I think it's going to at least spark the conversation that we can do better by our chronically homeless if we help them with their health care concerns. And that's why I say that homelessness is a medical condition. Let's solve this for America.
Hawaii State Senator Josh Green, thank you very much for your time today.
You bet. Thank you, Jane.
Liz Barney, Honolulu-based journalist writing about homelessness for The Guardian. Thank you so much for your work, Liz.
Thank you for having me.
And Steve Berg, Vice President for Programs and Policy at the National Alliance to End Homelessness. I appreciate your voice in this conversation, Steve. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
And also listener Shawnee Johnson, who pitched us this story in the first place from Honolulu. Thanks, Shawnee. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.